Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and while a lot goes on during the conventions behind the scenes, up in those skybox suites and at the parties and bars, and videos are used more and more, what most of us do see are the live speeches. So let's look at some of the rhetorical flourishes and flubs and the subtexts of last night's speeches with an expert now. John McWhorter is a linguist, a contributing editor at New Republic, and the author of What Language Is and What It Isn't and What It Could Be. Hey, John, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And let's replay this bit of Romney's speech when he talked about Neil Armstrong.
Tonight, that American flag is still there on the moon. And I don't doubt for a second that Neil Armstrong's spirit is still with us. That unique blend of optimism, humility, and the utter confidence that when the world needs someone to do the really big stuff, you need an American.
And you thought maybe you heard some coding in his use of the word American?
Yeah, and it's actually a tack I haven't usually been taking, and I have a piece in the Daily Beast this week where I take issue with the idea that this campaign has become all about race baiting. I think that some of the comments that have been made along those lines have been overinterpreted. The welfare bit certainly is a matter of blowing a dog whistle to people to let us know that Obama is not white. But with a lot of it, I think people have been exaggerating. But when Romney makes that comment about you need an American, I don't know if he meant it dead on the nose, but you can't help thinking, have we not had an American so far? And then when he makes his comment about this America and how Obama promised to move the waters, whereas I just want to help your family. In general, there's this exoticization of the man, and you saw so much of this with the other speeches as well, where you heard about America is this, America is this. And of course, Republican conventions do this, but that was really ramped up at this one. And I can't help detecting a general sense that they're trying to make a certain segment of the audience think of Obama as something else. And I don't know if that's necessarily black American, but it's definitely other. And it's not the prettiest thing, especially when I find myself feeling that way, when I tend to resist that sort of interpretation of dialogue like that.
And listeners, if you want to bring up any stretch, any passage, any individual word in any of the speeches this week for linguist John McWhorter, you have a chance at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And, of course, our comments pages are open all show. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. You can post your thoughts and your questions there. But our phone number for the air, 212-433-WNYC. So, kind of from the other side, what about where Romney says this?
But what could you do except work harder, do with less, try to stay optimistic, hug your kids a little longer, maybe spend a little more time praying that tomorrow would be a better day? I wish President Obama had succeeded because I want America to succeed. But his promises gave way to disappointment and division.
So when he talks about hoping that Obama had succeeded because then America would succeed, did that negate any of what you heard in the other thing because he was making Obama American?
Yeah, it did. I thought that that was a very important passage because it shows that these kinds of codings, if they're there, are not as clear-cut as we'd like to think. The facts are complex. And one can say that this exoticization and this racialization is an element, but I think often when people say element, it's kind of a euphemism for that's what it's all about. And I don't think that in particular Romney is that kind of person. He's given no evidence of being somebody with that in his heart. Frankly, I don't think that he knows that people who aren't like him exist for the most part. I think most of us would agree with that largely. And during the primaries, he stood apart from that kind of thing being thrown around by Gingrich and Santorum for the most part. I think that fundamentally he doesn't think in that way, and I think that he may have been pretty much sincere when he said that about his take on Obama specifically. And obviously these are people who don't want to seem too overtly against the man, which I think is partly what was behind this Clint Eastwood chair business, because I think we do often have a sense that if Obama is criticized, there must be, quote-unquote, an element of racialization in it. If you make him a phantom sitting in this chair so that in a way we can't see him and in a way he's disembodied, it's a way of being quite dismissive and even entertainingly so in some ways, as Eastwood was, without having the man himself, the person who's on those posters on the ceiling that Paul Ryan talked about, right there to look beat up upon.
So let's go for all the accusations that Republicans are xenophobic, this was an applause line for Senator Marco Rubio from Florida, who introduced Romney.
My dad used to tell us, en este país, ustedes van a poder lograr todas las cosas que nosotros no pudimos. In this country, you're going to be able to accomplish all the things we never could.
So do you think Republicans are more welcoming than sometimes given credit for, or is there a context where foreign language expertise is seen as a good thing, as long as the rest of your speech is in sort of unaccented English?
Well, I think it's the latter. I found that moment interesting because here he speaks his second native language and he gets applause as if he was spinning plates on a stick or something. And that's an American trait. We are a very monolingually focused society in many ways, and we can't help it. It's just been that way. We think English is the language that Jesus spoke. And if anybody speaks something else, well, what an interesting trick that is. And so he's seen as pulling something off by speaking that sentence. But I think also there was a sense that he was showing that Republicans are not necessarily xenophobic, that they're not racist, that they can accept another language. But of course, this was a person who was singing of the grand old immigrant tradition. And so for him, the language was, you know, needlepoint or heritage or spaghetti and meatballs, as was often discussed among Italian immigrants 50 years ago. It wasn't anything that one would perceive as threatening, but it shows that the idea that Republicans are completely against, for example, Spanish, is not necessarily true. It's just a matter of where the Spanish happens to pop up its head.
Linguist John McWhorter, author of What Language Is. And let's take a call from Janet in Harlem, because she wants to talk about the Rubio speech. Hi, Janet.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks for calling.
Yeah, and when you were talking about different phrases, I think it was Rubio who said something of the ilk, but we own America, and everyone stood up and clapped. And I thought, well, what does that mean? The Republicans own America? And I feel that's the message, that whatever the Republicans are promoting, they really think that's the right, and that's the right way, and everyone's supposed to be that way.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. It's a strange thing, because ultimately what it comes down to is that Obama has not been a spectacular president. I voted for him, and I'll vote for him again. But no one would say that he's been great at the job. But there isn't a whole lot that he's done so badly that's unequivocally his fault, that there's a whole lot of a case to be made for, we've got to get rid of this guy. He has failed in a way that we would not have. And the Republicans don't exactly have a secret weapon in Mitt Romney. And so you have to use these bloviated notions, such as what the real America is, in a quest to get at people's guts. And it can be a little bit disturbing, but then that's an odd thing about being an educated American, that we're often so uncomfortable looking at patriotism. But that is a whole other story.
Rosa in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Rosa.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. You know, it's interesting listening to all you on the radio as to how you make a case, you know, for Obama. The one thing that I saw yesterday, just to reiterate something, since I came from Italy, okay, and Italy doesn't eat just spaghetti and meatballs. We have a lot of other dishes, by the way. Ever since I came from Italy, I've been a Democrat. I registered a Democrat. I went to college here. All right. But as of last year, as of this particular election, I changed my party affiliation to being a Republican, all right, because I saw what's going on in the Democrat. Everything they do is demonize everybody else. But yeah, yesterday it was so refreshing to hear everybody just speak facts, just say what it is. You know, we are in trouble in this country, and we actually need somebody that has actual experience in the field to get us out of it. When you say, I'm sure that I'm going to listen to the Democrat convention just to see what goes on, but just to know that some of the people they're bringing on, they're going to offend women like me. I am an independent. I've been a single mother raising my kids. God has given me the ability to be able to raise them accordingly and to put food on the table. okay? When my mother came to this country, she kissed the ground, okay, just like Rubio said. Okay, we kissed the ground to be here, and yet now everybody has this thing about against conservatives.
Rosa, thank you very, very much.
And well, I'll say very quickly, first of all, Rosa, I am a great lover of Italian food, and I only mentioned spaghetti and meatballs because back in the old days, that was a stereotype that was often discussed as the quintessential Italian food. And as far as my own history politically, I certainly do not operate under the impression that to be a Republican is to be evil or ignorant. I know way, way, way too many Republicans who are much smarter than me and much less evil. And so I very much hear you on that, but I'm sure that we're going to find interesting things said by the Democrats as well. And I think this year they might be a little more substantial than what the Republicans have had to rely on, particularly this year because of the nature of things.
And of course, we'll see what they do say next week. And Rosa talks about the Democrats being the divisive ones. And we heard that from Mitt Romney last night. And that puts the Democrats on the defensive for next week because, after all, look, even Ryan Liz in The New Yorker, I think it was, who wrote, the Obama campaign has been about Romney and the Romney campaign has been about nothing. But the first part of that, the Obama campaign has been about Romney, you know, Romney and a lot of Republicans point out that the language of the Democrats is the language of envy. And so we'll hear where they come from with this divisive stuff, too. You flagged a flub that you wanted us to play here as a linguist. Let's see if listeners can find it in this 16-second Romney clip.
But if you ask Ann and I what we'd give to break up just one more fight between the boys, or wake up in the morning and discover a pile of kids asleep in our room, well, every mom and dad knows the answer to that.
Well, that was a good emotional moment for him, for one thing. But tell us, I know the answer because you pointed it out to me, but go ahead, what was the mistake?
These blackboard grammar rules that we're taught, it's supposed to be if you ask Ann and me. And I found it interesting because presumably that's in the teleprompter, so it's not that he got emotional and had some sort of slip-up. And I should say, linguists are not in favor of a certain kind of supposed grammatical rule that nobody actually follows all the time, or if they do, it's something they've learned carefully, like spinning a plate on a stick. I personally think that if you ask Ann and I is perfect native English, but it does have a social evaluation. And I was just surprised to see it coming from Romney, what with the hair and what with the studied perfection of delivery. Obama has been noted as making that same quote-unquote quote mistake often. A lot of his Michelle and I's, you can do a Google and find them.
It's so picky. I can't even believe we're talking about that he said Ann and I instead of Ann and me. But go ahead.
It was just something that stuck out because you wouldn't expect that hair out of place from Mitt Romney.
So I want to get your reaction before we run out of time to this clip, which, as we discussed earlier, really caught my attention.
President Obama promised to begin to slow the rise of the oceans and to heal the planet. My promise is to help you and your family.
So we talked about the delegate yesterday who explained why he's a Republican by saying that the EPA makes it harder for him to do his job as an exterminator. I don't think pesticide regulation is necessarily a bad thing, or that climate change is good for me and my family. So what was your reaction to that?
I thought that line was politically obviously quite callow because it makes it seem like being concerned about the environment and global warming is some sort of tick rather than something that scientific evidence makes it clear is very urgent. But one has to admit that was also a damned good line in the rhetorical sense. And so it makes Obama sound like Jesus for a minute. And let's face it, we were all thinking of him that way for a while, especially in 08. And then he just zeroes in on something very mundane that any politician should want to focus on. I just want to help your family. I thought that was an extremely well-crafted line, although I certainly don't agree with its premise.
And some people are taking the premise to mean he's got a bit of global warming denier in him. And some people are just taking it as, oh, come on, everybody, can't you take a joke? And I can't let you go without asking you about, and listen for 6 seconds, the empty chair.
I've got Mr. Obama sitting here. And I just was going to ask him a couple questions.
John, we have 15 seconds. We all know it didn't work. Who would you put in your empty chair, and what would you ask them?
Romney. And to be honest, I've always wanted to ask him, how do you reconcile your squishiness and your saying anything in order to get elected with your deeply Mormon mission? I don't get how you can be both things, and I'd just like to hear how he would put the two of them together, but I'll never get to ask him that.
John McWhorter's book, What Language Is and What It Isn't and What It Could Be, is newly out in paperback. John, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.